PHP Radio
on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network,
your number one source for all things golf.
Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.
And welcome back, everyone, to a brand new episode of the original, the only Off Course Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Edwards, and with me this week is longtime THP member Mike Thomas. He's known as Illiterate on the forum with a one in there. I like to call him E1 Iterate. Mike, how are you, buddy?
Hey, man, doing great. Appreciate you having me on the show, buddy.
Yeah, you know, you might be the first guest I've ever had that's more persistent on me than I am on them to get you on, which I really appreciated, aside from the fact that I've been like basically in a cold coma for the last 4.5 days. I assure you, you had a better weekend than I did. I appreciate that. And I'm really glad to get you on because you are actually the other half of a significant THP event coming up here in January called The Rivalry. It's hosted by UST Mamiya and obviously THP Golf. And it's you against friend of the podcast. I don't even know if we want to say his name yet. His name is J-Dax, Dax Jeter. A lot of people know him. You have been longtime friends with him. How excited are you to get the ball rolling on this event?
Well, you know, this past, I guess, couple of weeks, we finally got our teams selected or drawn from the hat, so to speak. And so it's been a lot of fun getting to know a couple of, like, so my team, like, I've actually played with a good majority, you know. So I played with JB before, played with Danny before, TTU Cliffhanger, actually went to college with. We were in the same fraternity in college. So he's been a longtime friend of mine. And, you know, Parrott, I got to spend time with him at the Morgan Cup. He was actually my alt shot partner during that. And then Tred is a fellow Brash brother. So I really knew quite a bit of the team coming into this. So feeling good about the squad. Shout out to Luden and someone's coach. Super excited to get to meet those two guys. So,
okay. So there's a lot of friendliness early on. When you mentioned Danny, that's actually Danny Lee, who yep. is our guy over at UST. Great fella. What's it like to have someone like him on your team representing you against the competition? That's got to feel pretty good.
This event, while it's, I know it's kind of based around Dax and I, Danny is the perfect teammate and trash talker, and I can't wait to see this go down in January.
Yeah, and he's a bit of a stick too. He's a good player. Would you say his golf game is better or his shoe game?
Oh man, that's a great question. Danny is definitely a shoe connoisseur, but I've seen him play, and it is really good. But his shoe game is definitely top notch. Like, he is into the shoes. So I'm gonna go shoe game just because he doesn't get to play much golf. So I'm gonna say shoe game for sure. No offense, Danny.
I love it. He's a man of the people. He's been a guest on Off Course before. We're glad to follow that event along with you guys. And I'm definitely going to get you and Dax on to, I guess you could call it friendly banter, but honestly, I think I need a mute button or a bleep button or something like that when the two of you get connected. The interesting part about this event, and this is what I'm so excited about, because as an onlooker, not being a part of the event, normally I think, man, what a beautiful setting. It's so warm there. It sucks because it's January and I'm on Ohio and I can't play, blah, blah, blah. In this case, there is a decent chance that weather, and I mean cold weather, could play a role here. This is Nashville in January, which is kind of a wild card. It's not going to be awful, but it's not going to be balmy and short weather. How much of a role do you think that'll play?
So, Nashville weather is very similar to how it is here in Charlotte. You know, January, you could have 20 degrees and snow. You could have 50 degrees and wet. And then you could have that random, like, 70 degree weekend that's just absolutely beautiful and magnificent. So while I'm hoping for that, like, 60 or 70 degree weekend to kind of be that weekend, I'm fully mentally prepared to play in the snow, the wind, the cold, wet, whatever it is, because I can't miss an opportunity to take down my buddy, J-Dax. And I've already done it once. So, you know, mentally I know I can do it, and he's just got nothing but doubts running in his head. So I'm living rent-free already. It's a win-win for me.
So I have so many things to talk about as it relates to that. First of all, I'll let the cat out of the bag and let everyone know that both captains reached out to me asking me opinions on pairings and thoughts of that nature. I will tell you, there were two totally different perspectives hitting my phone. I had to double check. It was very clear who was texting me. I just wanted to make sure I knew which one it was, but it was very clear that you guys do it in a different way, but you've been bros for so long, like 2 decades or something like that. Now you used to play golf together when you lived in the same town. I mean, this rivalry runs deep, deep, deep. But what started it, and how much is the friendship gotten better or changed or improved or whatever you want to call it, based on the fact that you guys used to play against each other on a daily or weekly basis?
So we actually met in an underground poker game years ago. So both of us were big into the poker scene for a little bit, and that is how we met. And then I guess we both shared an affinity for, I guess, or a love for golf. And we started to play a little bit here and there together. We weren't a member of a club or anything like that. And then eventually, and I'm trying to think of when this was, this has probably been maybe like 11 or 12 years ago. And Dax can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think it was about 11 or 12 years ago that we actually joined Gaylord Springs together, like within the same month of one another. And at that point, it was just kind of on. Like, we started playing every single weekend. You know, we try to get out after work and sneak 9 in. I mean, we were obsessed. Now, I've seen Dax shoot in the 120s there, you know, years ago. He's improved significantly. And I mean, I've shot in the hundreds there, and I've improved significantly, you know, just from over the years of playing. But we've shared, I mean, thousands of rounds of golf together, you know, probably at Gaylord through that time period. And then, I guess 4 years ago, I got offered a promotion at work, and I moved here to Charlotte. And so we haven't played as much golf together, but we've made it a point that when I do come to Nashville, that we tee it up. But we've never really played competitively against one another outside of when I was helping him prep for the Granddaddy back in, I think it was 2016, if I'm not mistaken, I think. And that's when he got the beat down from Finley, I think the infamous 8-6, just as a reminder for everybody if they forgot, especially for Dax. But we played a little bit of match play then, but I don't think we really understood kind of the magnitude of like the match play and stuff. I mean, we understood the Ryder Cup and President's Cup and stuff like that, but we didn't really play much competitive. It was just really casual. Let's go out there and have fun and let's see what we can shoot. But really kind of, I guess, where the rivalry started for us with THP is our good friend JB, Josh. He asked Dax and I if we would be generals at the Ben Hogan event a couple of years ago. And didn't tell Dax and I that if at the end of day 2, if this was tied, that we were going to have to face off against one another in a single hole. And in that process, lo and behold, the teams are tied at the end of day 2, and we have to go and play this single hole. And it was so intense that Dax would not speak to me or shake my hand after it was over. Like, that's how upset he was that he lost.
All right. So I'm just going to throw this out here just because I want to. From a mental aspect, you both hit good drives down the fairway. You got 145 yards to the pin. Who do you think is more mentally prepared to hit that shot?
Mentally prepared. I mean, I'm not just saying this because it's myself, but I mean, of course I'm going to tell you me. Dax, I mean, we've heard that the head case that Dax is right now, you know, and I hate to say this, but like, if there's been anybody that's been battle tested, it's been me this year. And I've played a lot of competitive golf this year, and done really, really well. So, as far as from a mental perspective, knowing that I can do it, I absolutely 100% know, like, from 145 yards, I know what it takes to hit a green on the 18th hole when it matters. And I've done it, you know. So sign me up for that.
So what about on the second hole at Gaylord Springs, because it's a good bogey hole?
Well, Dax told you it's a good bogey hole because it took him like 8 years to actually finally birdie it. So, I mean, truthfully, the hardest part of that hole, and I'm assuming that Josh is probably going to have us move up to the blue tees given the cold and the wet that we may experience. So the tree that's directly over to the right that you tee off on that Dax likes to hit into all the time, that's probably going to be out of play because we're going to be moved up enough to where even when he blocks it right, it's just going to go into the seventh fairway. So, but in all honesty, I mean, I've played from the seventh fairway my fair share of times as well. But if you get it down there enough, I mean, you're going to have, you know, and you get down that little hill, you know what I'm talking about, how it kind of drops off there. You got a wedge, you know, in, or even if you get it to the end where it's at the top of the hill, you know, you could have a 9-iron in or something like that. So, I mean, it's not that hard of a hole unless you make it.
So Gaylord Springs is an interesting golf course. And I say that because the people who miss a little bit have quite a challenge between the holes because there is significant, I'd call them dunes. They're just big, big hills. And you're faced with either an upslope or downslope or a side hill lie, whatever it may be. But if you're like off the planet miss, you can miss into another perfectly cut fairway, and suddenly you're just playing a dog leg that you didn't know existed. It is not so bad. That'll be the fun part. And that's the part that I like about this event being where it is you have the elements of potential cold. You have the elements of the emotional game that's played. But in reality, that's a golf course where you can miss as long as you miss off the tee in the right place and not, you know, into the green. So I'm excited to follow along with that. But what I'd really rather do right now, Mike, is talk about everything that you've accomplished this year on your own regard, because you've done something. I saw a trophy. I know it wasn't the one you wanted, so we'll get into that. But it's my understanding you put some significant time into an inner club.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. Lay that out for me a little bit. What did you guys do and how far did you make it?
So this was the first year I've ever really participated in any sort of like true team, like season golf. Like I've done the Morgan Cup before here. I did, you know, a regional rivalry, you know, and that's usually kind of a 1 or 2 day thing and it's done, but like a season long thing, I've never really ever done that before. So, one of our captains approached me and he, you know, back in the off season was like, "Hey, Mike, you know, have you ever thought about playing interclub?" And I was like, "Yeah," I was like, "you know, I think it would be fun." And he's like, "you know, why don't you be a part of our team? You know, I think you could help us." And I was like, "okay, you know, sure." So our first match, you know, and the way interclub works, let me kind of lay it out for you, is during the regular season, you have 6 matches. And so you have 8 guys from your team that participate in these matches. So in the regular season, you have home and away matches. So you'll have 8 guys. So essentially, like, let's say you and I are paired together. We would take on 2 guys from, you know, whatever club we're playing. And, you know, if it's a home match, they're coming to your home course and you're playing there. If it's an away match, you're going to their home course and you're playing there. So you have 6 matches, 3 home, 3 away. And I played in 3 regular season matches. So the first match, I wasn't part of the team, but I, you know, went out and kind of supported or whatever. And then finally, you know, they called my number. We were playing Firethorn at home. And so I was playing with another guy that it was his first time. And so honestly, it's quite a bit of nerves, you know, just because like I've never played in like a, you know, had never played in a competitive match at the country club. And so we managed to kind of, you know, ham and egg our way around the course enough to scrounge out a half. And we actually ended up losing. It was one of the 2 matches that we lost this year during the regular season. However, we were the only team that day that either won or got a half. So we got a half. The other 3 teams on our team actually lost. And so we kind of got our butts kicked pretty good. But the next time we actually went to Firethorn and played there, and we just absolutely destroyed them as bad as they beat us at our home course, which usually when you're at your home course, you have an advantage, but it was kind of interesting how that worked out. And then I got to play at, I think it's Pine Lake, and we won that one pretty handily as well, which they had made to the state finals the year before. So long story short, we end up making the playoffs, and I'm actually playing some, you know, pretty good golf. I started out the year, I think I was like around a 12 handicap, and then really put a, you know, some good string of rounds together for me. The slope at my home course is 144, so it's not a walk in the park by any means. It's very narrow. There's lots of trees. You have to be, it's target golf, you know, but you have to be accurate off the tee. And Dax would tell you this, probably the best part of my game is my long irons. It's not necessarily, I've got good length on the tee, but long irons, you know, kind of play a strength for me. And so I'm able to hit long irons and I'm hitting well off the tee, so I can put myself in good positions and score. And I've really worked hard on trying to be better with like my short iron and wedges, like coming into greens and hitting those more. And I've gotten better, but I'm still not really where I want to be. But this year was just, I mean, we end up making the playoffs. There's four rounds of the playoffs. We end up winning all four. I play in all four. The most memorable moment, I know you probably will ask, will be, I will tell you, is it came down to the 18th hole. My partner Zach and I were one up, and they had just won the 17th hole. So we're technically dormy, but in order for us to win, you know, and win the overall match, we need to win this hole. So the way that it works is if you win your overall match, so even like, let's say you close out your match 8-6, like Jason Finley did against Dax, you know,
it's
you still
a
have to
system,
play the
right?
remainder of the holes.
It's all point system, right?
Yeah. So you still have to play the remainder of the holes. Each hole is worth a point. And then if you win the overall match, you get 2 points on top of that. So there's 20 points total that you can earn, and you need 40.5, you know, as a group in order to win the overall match. Well, it comes down to the 18th hole, and I hit my ball, my tee ball down the left, and I'm just in the rough. And then Zach, my partner, is in dead middle of the fairway, but he's a little bit back. He's got a little further of a shot into this. And we're playing at Tiga K Country Club. And the 18th hole at Tiga K, you have to hit it over water. It's not an island green. You could miss long, but it's kind of dead back there. But you definitely don't want to miss short because it's 100% dead at that point. Well, they have the pin, like this sucker pin, where it's like front left. And so you need to kind of hit it long or hit it over to the fat part of the green over to the right. And Zach hits it literally hole high with something, and it spins off the green. And I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. So they have a guy that has hit, and he is just off the back, but it's a pretty easy up and down because he can putt it from down there, but it is downhill. So, and their greens are quick. They have Bermuda, and they keep them pretty quick. So, you know, I'm kind of telling myself, well, like, hey, I got to hit a shot here. You know, this is why we play. And subsequently, I think we had about 135 yards, which generally speaking from that distance, I'm going to hit, you know, a pitch and wedge. But given the moment, like my ball was sitting up in the rough just a little bit, I thought I might catch it a little high on the face. I was also thinking like, well, there could be a flyer. I was like, but really, honestly, I can get a little steep with my swing. So more than likely my miss is going to be high on the face, but just put a good smooth swing on it. So I remember Zach coming over to me and he's like, hey, what are you thinking here? I was like, I'm just going to hit a nice smooth nine, you know, like I did on, you know, a couple holes back or whatever it was. And he looks at me and he says, I love it. Just do it. And so I didn't expect him to tell me anything different or like question my thought process. I think, you know, in his mind, he wanted to give me confidence of whatever I was thinking. And so I end up hitting the shot and I put it just dead center, fat part of the green over to the right. And at that point, it's just two putts and we win because I'm popping on 18. So I two putt and we end up winning. And like, I kind of like throw my hands up and like Zach comes over and hugs me and picks me up. And he's like, big players make big plays in big games. And he goes, dude, you are a stud. And he's like a one handicap. So for somebody to tell me that, like, you know, it really meant a lot to me. And that was our first round playoff match. And he's like, dude, we're not going to Pinehurst without you. Like, so, you know, and anyway, we end up winning our next three matches and we go to Pinehurst and it's really a semifinal. So, Longleaf is the club that we're playing and it's suddenly out of nowhere. Like the weekend before we're wearing shorts playing in the round to go to Pinehurst. And now we're bundled up like it's 30 degrees outside. And on top of that, it's very windy, very cloudy, and it's the greens are firm, but like the fairways and like around the greens are soft because it's also rained. Mm-hmm. And so it made just for some very tough conditions. And we ended up winning our semifinal match and got to go play. We ended up playing the club at Pine Needles and Mid Pines, and we got our butts kicked. All four of our groups lost matches. But man, those were the toughest conditions I've ever played in. And it was an experience I'll never forget. And I had so much fun doing it. And so I'm really, really excited to get to turn around here in a couple months and play in another like team atmosphere and get to know these guys kind of coming into the rivalry. But Interclub was a really good experience for me. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
That's some big heat, man. Are you going to do it again next year?
Oh, absolutely. We actually have our team dinner or like, I guess, team awards dinner or whatever coming up on like mid-December. And then like, I think it's the weekend before Christmas, if I'm not mistaken, on like that Friday night. So we're going to get together for that. But yeah, we're going to do it again. And everybody's hungry. Everybody's already talking about like, we got to go back and redeem ourselves. But man, those were the hardest conditions I've ever played in. Like to give you an idea of how strong the winds were, on Saturday when we're playing in the semifinal match, my partner Eric at the time, he and I teed off. And then a gentleman from Fort Mill Country Club teed off and he got a little bit underneath it. Because remember, we're, you know, weekend club golfers, as Faldo says. And the winds were probably a good steady 20 mile an hour. And we were getting gusts 35, 40 miles an hour, maybe even more. And this gust suddenly kind of came in. He got underneath it and the ball just hits like this wall of wind. And you see it start to come back and it hits the cart path and just bounces back. And I bet he got about 50 yards off the tee. And no sooner than his ball came to rest, the tent that they had set up in behind the first tee that had the scorecards and pencils and tees and all that stuff blows over. And I mean, that just set the tone for the whole weekend.
You know, I have a perspective on days like that. Do you know what they are?
Everybody's dealing with it. Just go out there and play your best.
No, I stay home.
You stay home. Yeah. Well, that wasn't an option.
Well, that's cool, man. Hey, do you remember our first meeting together? It's been a few years.
Yes. And it was actually my very first THP event. I cannot remember the year. You may remember the year. Was it 14 or 15?
It was pretty early on. Yeah. I remember it where it was. So that counts for something. It was at PGA National.
PGA National.
Big,
yep.
THP championship there.
Yep.
And, I believe this was it day one? We played on not the champions course there, but the alternate course.
I think because we played the Palmer course on Saturday, but I'm fairly certain I think we played the Champions course day
two.
I think we were paired up that day.
Okay. What I remember,
memory could be wrong. It's been a while.
Yeah. What do you remember most about that day?
Just how high. I just remember high draws with the driver from Mr. Dan Edwards himself. All day, down the middle.
Do you remember the hole that I was in the right rough? And it's pathetic that I remember this. And I hit one to about 2 inches.
I seem to remember there was a hole where you hit it really, really close.
And what happened on the hole after that, sir?
That I don't remember. And you need to forget that too, because you just need to remember the one you hit the 2 inches before.
Yeah, I was pretty thrilled with myself. I believe it one hopped, hit the pin, and bounced and landed beside it. And I was like, man, that's, you know, it's a lot easier to put on Bermuda when you can just kick it in. And then the following hole, I got one upped a little bit by the man on the other side of this microphone, who plops one straight in there for a deuce. And that was it. That was the end of my fun story.
So if I recall, we had to play the trap, the bear trap from the tips that day. So we played the two long par threes, like that were basically dead into the wind from the tips, like where the pros played. That was cool.
It was mean is what that was. And, and I'm thrilled that Josh is actually playing an event with you guys in January. Otherwise you'd probably be playing the tips there too. So yeah, but that's fun, man. It's been years, and actually we haven't played golf probably since then. So I'm here on the show to say, let's make a point of playing next year, since we haven't done it in so long. I mean, that's kind of full circle, right?
Exactly. Well, you, I think you have family, you know, that's not too far from here. So when you decide to migrate south from, you know, from the cold in Ohio, you know, we should definitely make that happen. I would be more than happy to treat you to a round, at my country club. Now, it's nothing special, but I would love to treat you to a round out here sometime.
It sounds like I need to get my driver in shape before I get there. There's a couple things I really want to talk to you about, because I know there's a lot of things you love about golf, but one of the things that you seem to be focused on, and we see this a lot on the THP forum, is your head cover collection. fair to say that that's the primary collectible in the Mike Thomas collection of golf things?
So I'll tell you how it got started, and you can think, I will thank two of my good friends who I met through THP, Big Deal, Nick, I'll send him a shout out, and Tevener, who's about to go to the granddaddy, and Big Deal just got back from the big, you know, dream foursome event at PGA National, where you and I first teamed
up. Imagine that.
So these two guys are actually the reason that I'm into this head cover game. So they're all to blame, and my wife is very upset with both of them. I'm kidding, but they actually, as you know, I'm a big Chiefs fan. And so Swag actually did a release for the Super Bowl this past year that I'd like to forget. And they did like a Kansas City Chiefs theme head cover. And so I knew that Nick and Sean both, you know, both were collecting, and they were like, hey, Mike, do you want one of these? And I was like, kind of hem-hauled around. And I didn't understand, like, you needed to be on and then, like, checking out within 5 seconds or you were going to miss out. And so Nick ends up getting one, and he's like, hey, I got one. I know you want it. And so that is how all this started. So I blame Big Deal and Nick for this. But Swag, you know, I have a pretty good collection of Swag, but I've migrated recently and put my focus into probably Sugar Skull, which I think I've tagged you in some posts, and I keep updating you of my collection there.
You have, yeah. So I know there's some others, but let's talk about the appeal to head covers, because when I started collecting, I did a lot of Seymour back in the day. I was really big on Seymour, their putters for a long time. Their SPI kind of helped me not be a trash putter. And you know that, like with anything, if you get focused on a putter, well, what else can you do? You buy head covers, right? And and I think I have a full tub of them still sitting downstairs that, you know, I need to send out to someone to put on their covers at some point. But then I got a couple different Scotty Camerons, and I have one that is currently in the bag that doesn't seem to want to leave the bag, and I'd probably get beaten by a number of friends who listen to the podcast if I ever really genuinely got rid of it. But what I realized, man, was once you get to a certain point, it becomes a bit of an insanity, you know? And what I did personally is I limited it to, because I started with that same sort of thing. Like, I was starting to build my second tub, this time with Scotty covers, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, Scotty covers are, they don't have the same kind of durability and quality that a lot of these cover companies are coming out with now and doing. And knowing that, and knowing the price that Scotty was going in with the aftermarket stuff, I decided I'm just going to use one a year, and I'm going to stop with the insanity and, you know, just limit it to one a year. And that actually really helped me stop buying covers, was that I, each year at the end of the year, I put one cover, one scorecard and one golf ball representing my low score of the round a year into a shadow box, and that's it. I don't do anything else. And thank God for that, because I believe I'd probably have, you know, you'd see behind me just shelves of head covers, I'm sure, because I'm insane. And my wife doesn't care enough to get mad at me. So, you know, it's the slush fund or whatever you want to call it. So
yep.
That's kind of the avenue I went into. But it's also sort of limited for me the experience of a lot of these new companies. Now, I did buy into Swag. They did a really cool Canadian cover that I got that I actually had imported in. A good friend. Mr. Kagawa up in Canada, if he listens to the podcast, thanks again for going to your local golf town and grabbing me that one. That's cool. Actually, it's your buddy Dill who hooked me up with the Queen 20 head cover, which is currently in the bag.
Okay.
So he did not make me pay the aftermarket fees, if you will. he was generous in that regard. And you know, and those are my two swag covers. So I just wanted to set you up there to say, how much different is your experience? And do you see your trend continuing? Do you see enough variety in that to where you'll keep going, it'll keep expanding, or are you going to be selective and then trade off, or what's your plan?
So, I think part of it is there is an after, you kind of touched on it. There's an aftermarket, you know, potential out there. So like if you land a certain cover, like it could be worth, you know, thousands of dollars.
Crazy, right?
Right. I mean, as an example, like I got a swag cover that's was an Augusta drip cover. And I think there's maybe, you know, and they're fairly limited. It was 1 of 100, but it's a dripping skull cover that's very sought after, and it's Masters themed. So people love the Masters. And I recently started liquidating a little bit of my swag collection, and I ended up making $1,000 on this cover, you know, aftermarket. Now,
I'm mad at that too. Let's be clear. She needs to know, right? That's the part we do.
The problem is I took that $1,000 and I dumped it into Sugar Skull for some covers I was looking for there.
Okay.
And I've seen some crazy stuff in Sugar Skull lately. So like they have like game groups on Facebook, and like people, I mean, I seen a cover game for $3,000 two nights ago on there. I mean, it's insane, like what some of the aftermarket values are. And there's like it's either Black Friday or Cyber Monday that Sugar Skull's doing another drop. And these are like 1 of 1 covers. And I have no idea like what the secondary market is going to look like for these. Like I could see, you know, $700, $800, $900, $1,000, you know, for like a sealed box. You know, hey, I'll sell you my sealed box that I just bought, and I have no idea what's inside, for $1,000. And people are going to buy them because they have a chance of getting, you know, some unique cover that they're really, really after. But I do see myself continuing to do it, to answer your question.
Yeah. So I started sort of perusing for my 2022 cover, and it's been a little bit frustrating because Swag did a Two-Face cover that was kind of like this crazy pink and a green. You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And yep. I think, was it Jefferson was on the front of it?
Yeah.
Super rad cover. And I was like, yeah, okay, I could probably get into that one. And it's not like, it doesn't make me happy when I look at the price of it, but it doesn't hurt me emotionally to see that number. It might hurt my dad, who's eventually going to listen to this podcast, and don't ask when you see it in my bag, because that's what's going to happen. But then I found out that there's a special that was like it's like one of the sides is white and the other side's black, I think.
Yep, white and black. And
it's super rad. And this is where it gets problematic, right? Because what good does only buying one head cover do when it costs 10 head covers? You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's the truth. I mean, I have my Sugar Skull collection. I'll move my monitor here where you can kind of see that. But there's so much stuff. Like this is a U.S. Open graffiti cover right here, and then this one right here is the U.S. Open graffiti special which has the goats on it. So it's got Hogan, Woods, Nicholas, Palmer, you know, like graffitied on it. And so it's like, well, I've got the graffiti like US Open regular. Now I need the special because it's got Hogan, Woods, Nicholas, and Palmer on it, right? So yeah, it's a rabbit hole.
Yeah, no kidding. So you had mentioned there's others, and I know you said the Buck Club was one of them. We had talked a little bit about it before the show. I'm seeing a couple different names come up there. I've always been a big fan of Robert Mark and the way he designs his head covers. It's been interesting watching Hatch work, even though Hatch Golf is more of like, they kind of, it's weird how they drop. They don't really drop on all platforms. It seems very Facebook driven. But then you get into like some of the more creative driver head covers and, you know, top of the bag covers. So you have your Dormies, your Shame, there's Seamus. You have Case is getting really popular right now. I mean, my driver game sucks and all I want to do is plop a dumpster fire driver cover from Case on it. Like, do you think this is the avenue a lot of people are going to see expand? Because, I mean, obviously we've seen it with boutique putters. That platform of here's my stuff, you can buy it now, and all you got to do is click and I'll show you more later. Free advertising. Do you think that works in the same way for a head cover company? And do you think we see more and more of these companies do this?
I mean, you think about what Swag did. They actually, you know, recently at the Ryder Cup, if you paid attention, a lot of the Ryder Cup guys, or I think all of them, had Swag head covers. And I think that they were saying that, you know, Captain Steve Stricker, you know, wanted like these head covers for the guys, like as a gift. And so Swag then, like, you know, their normal drop, like they're charging, you know, $110 for the head cover. They did like a Ryder Cup theme drop with a mallet.
Yeah, it was putter. Like $5,000, wasn't it?
Yeah, $5,555. And people paid it. It sold out in seconds.
It was, how many were there? Were there 40?
I think there were, there were 40 total. And I think if you were one of the first 20, then you got like a commemorative, like swag box with like shredded money where that the head covers came in.
So, and this is the interesting part, right? Because Swag started because someone thought they could do it better. I mean, it's no secret that Nick used to be the tour stock guy, Bettinardi. There's a lot of crossover there. Bettinardi used to have really awesome head covers and head cover ideas. That's obviously transitioned now to Swag. And Swag has not slowed down in their ability to create new and interesting and crazy. I mean, hell, they merged with EP, which basically says, not only do you build our head covers, now we own you. So that's very interesting there. But how many of those guys do you think out there? I mean, we can do it better. I can do it better. The thought there is I can do it better. So how do they do it better? They go and build their own easy, simple platform. And we're seeing this with all these different covers. I mean, Hatch is a great example. I didn't really know much about Hatch. I knew it used to be called
Blue Birdie.
And they became Hatch, which I think is a better name. And it got a better logo. And suddenly people are talking about it. It's really interesting. And you could make the argument, oh, there's not a big market for that. The market's quite small. But the interesting thing about that is the small market that's there pays and they pay attention. And that's kind of wild, right?
Yeah. And so I'll tell you what I've noticed, because I'm fully in the rabbit hole with like all these companies that you've mentioned. And so I follow them and I'm a part of some of these Facebook groups that you mentioned. And like, a lot of the people, so what I'm noticing is that the secondary market for Swag is starting to slow down a little bit. Like,
is it?
You know, there are certain releases that are still very sought after. But it's not like in the past where like every release was like kind of limited and you're like, oh my gosh, I've got to have it. Now, what you're seeing is, you know, these releases may sit up on the page for 2 or 3 minutes. So like, if there's a cover that you want, you can get it. As to where before, like if you weren't on and refreshing, you know, the absolute second that it dropped, you know, you missed out, you know, and then you had to pay an aftermarket price to get it. So what
that's what happened with, that's what happened with the $20 Queen. I got that, for very, very personal, emotional reasons. And you know, I only got it because of the kindness of someone else, because in time it took for me to put my PayPal info in, I lost out on the cover. Yep. Whereas if I wanted to go get the Joker, what is it? Harley Quinn. I think I called it Harvey Quinn, 'cause it looks more like a dude than a girl. You know, that one stayed up there for forever. Yeah. That was, you know, and they obviously had their reasons for it. I mean, it's obviously intended to look like the other, but, you know, it's funny how finicky people will get. And I wonder how these companies pivot when they see that.
Yeah. So when you look at, you know, that secondary market, how it slowed down, I think that what Swag has done is they're saying, hey, we're going to make more head covers and take more in, like on our end. And then the secondary market has kind of suffered because it's not as limited. Then you take a company like Hatch that comes in that makes a really good quality product. And those guys are, the guys that run that are very interactive in the Facebook group, and they're very good people. And so I have no problem supporting them, but again, they're making a limited product and they're interacting. And I think what they're doing is they're taking a different approach than what Swag is, essentially. And they're interacting and, you know, listening to kind of the fan base. And so you've seen a little bit of an evolution. And so there is this bit of craze towards like the Hatch, and you're seeing a lot of these OG, you know, Swag collectors that are kind of moving over there or starting to dabble in that market a little bit. And these OG Swag collectors, they're some of the guys that have pretty deep pockets. And so, you know, it's driving up some of that secondary market over there, but they've got some good stuff going on over there for sure.
That's the interesting thing for me, is because when I was in the Scotty game, and by that, I mean, I tried to buy some cheap Scotty covers. you saw the ability for people to just blink and buy a $12,000 putter, and that's never a realm that I'm in. Even if I can afford it, which I'm not telling you whether I can or I can't, I'm not just going to drop $12,000 in a putter. It's just not going to happen. But right. there are people out there, and that's what you got to think about as a collector, is like, how badly do I want this? Because there's at least X number of people who don't give a crap about this money, who are going to get it regardless. You know, and that was the challenge for me with Scotty, but it's fun to see it expand. It's fun to see it change. And, you know, I do enjoy a lot of the salt that comes into the comment sections, where people saying that the botters win again, the bots. That's pretty funny for me, especially when I'm not chasing something. But yeah, man, it's fun to watch it. And I've enjoyed your collection. I appreciate you sharing that with me as much as you have. And I'm excited to see what next, like by the next time you get on the show, I expect all the pictures on your one wall to be gone, and it's just going to be head covers across the wall with your wife, like, shaking her fist at the door.
So I'll tell you how I've combated, like, because my wife is, I have a wonderful wife, by the way. Like, I joke that she kind of rolls her eyes at times, like, especially when I have a lot of mail coming in, and she's like, oh, is it another head cover? And she kind of just shakes her head at me. But how I have kind of gotten her into it a little bit is Swag actually makes, and you'll probably recognize this, but they make this flipper cover.
Yeah. Hate it.
With the dolphin, or like it's named Swaggy.
Yeah.
And so she's like, oh, that's so cute, I love that. So like, now I have her own little small collection of the little Swag flipper. And so now, you know, like I got her one for Christmas that it's the 8-bit flipper special. It's black and it has like the pink, you know, the pink flipper on there. And she's always talking about, oh, it's so cute, it's pretty, I love that. And so like, now I'm gonna get this or I've got this, it's on the way, and I'm gonna give that to her as part of Christmas for her, because she's kind of gotten into it too.
But, so she's not listening to the podcast, is what you're saying.
She doesn't listen. However, is this going to drop on Black Friday?
It's going to drop, yeah, very soon. Yeah, for sure.
Okay. So it's, so this will drop. I mean, it is very possible that she listens, because she will listen to it with me when we're riding in the truck together.
Be
so
careful.
Depending on if we're traveling, she may hear this. But she probably will just smile. But either way, it's fine. But she gets into the flipper. So I've gotten her into it by doing that. And cool. So she's really enjoyed. And while she might roll her eyes, she's told me, she's like, I think it's cute that you're like really into something and you enjoy it and you have fun with it. And so
yeah,
she's actually really supportive.
That's what it's all about, man. That's cool. Yeah. So we went down some interesting paths tonight. And one thing I do want to say, and I know you listen to this show, so you'll have your opportunity. Don't worry. But I do want to get you and Dax back on. I don't think you threw near enough barbs at him. So hopefully the next time it gets a little bit more volatile, and I'll certainly let the folks know when it's going to happen. And especially THP members who are paying full attention to the rivalry. These two dudes are, and this is no joke, they get salty when it's competitive. Okay. So pay attention to when the rivalry shows up. My guy, Mike Thomas, do you have any questions for me?
Yeah. So I've got two questions that I thought about. Okay. Because I know you always like to ask your guests, like, hey, give me some questions. So
yeah,
if you could design the perfect head cover for Mr. Dan Edwards, what would this head cover look like? Like, what would it entail?
You told me that they were lobbying softball questions. That's corrupt, man. That was not in the cards. So obviously it has to be blue, right? Like there's all the other colors and then there's blue, and I'm associated with blue, so it will have blue in it. From there, I don't know. I really don't know. Like, and this is probably why I haven't started a head cover company, because I'm at the, I've got so many great ideas, I just can't think of them stage. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. What a challenging question. You know what? I think we'd have to do something with like, you can't. I do this every week, man. I say, give me a question, and I never answer it, and it's driving me nuts. This is starting to become my thing that I just, I'm going to answer in the thread we start for the podcast later on. I don't know, like maybe my kid and I are really into Funko Pops right now. So it'd be pretty fun to have like Funko Arnie on the side of one, you know.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah.
That'd be pretty rad. Right. And then, you know, maybe his drink kind of dancing around the top or something. I don't know. I'm an Arnie guy through and through. So if I can add something to where my kids like, this is crazy cool. And he has the association there already with golf and Arnold Palmer. Yeah, I dig that. Okay. Final answer. Blue for me. We'll do like since we're kind of talking EP tonight, we'll do like they have this really cool print that has like a drip to it. Not like you were talking about, but like a splatter. It's a splatter. That's what we're called, right? So on the very top, it's going to be like the Arnold Palmer Funko Pop style face. And then on the side, it's going to have like the half and half, the Arnold Palmer drink. But on the other side, it's going to have like a little, you know, that cartoony bottle of rum with like the X's on it to say like, you know, it's the Canadan, right? All right. So we're building this as we go. This is beautiful.
Anywhere in here,
absolutely no trademarking issues whatsoever. It's all free and clear. Okay. All right, you had one more, and I hope it was easier than that one.
Actually, you made me think of two. Do we have time, or I can?
We do. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay. So first, before I get to my other question that I planned, but what is the most fun part about being a dad for you? Because I'm a relatively new dad in the last 2 years, and so you're a more experienced veteran dad than I am, but what's the most fun part for you about being a dad?
Yeah. So my kid is, he's turning six here in, I guess it'd be about 28 days, 21st of December. And I'll be totally honest with you, Mike, the first couple of years were a challenge for me. I always hear like the earth shattering parts about being a dad. And I think we all find our wheelhouse for our kids. And for me, it's just watching him explore things for the first time. So the amount of pride that I get from him making good decisions, and, you know, we like to adventure together, but we do it in sort of a different way. So we started with Pokemon cards, which is super fun. The highs and lows there were crazy. So now we're doing the Funko Pop thing, which is super fun. Cause you get him to these positions where he's like, he's scanning, he's looking, and then he just snaps. He sees that one thing that just blows his mind. And you know, that everything you did up to that point that day is put him in that position to just have his mind blown.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is my kid. This is our day. We do the same thing with golf. He hits this crazy good shot. And dude, when this starts happening with little man, it's gonna be nuts. He's gonna hit this shot and he's gonna look back at you as surprised as you are, and you're both gonna be just thrilled. That's the best part, man. Yeah, that's the best part. Watching him figure things out on his own, but having you there and him looking at you saying, I want you to know that I figured this out and let's be a part of this together. That's the best part for me.
Yeah. It's you know, like you said, it's tough, but it's very rewarding. And man, it
gets better every day. And I'm told there's a big dip there in the teens and then you get to improve again.
Well, my wife and I are about to start trying for another. So hopefully I can say I'm a dad times two or about to be next time. So yeah.
All right. But, cold weather months. You got to do it.
That's right. You got to stay warm and just, you know, hang out at the house, whatever.
All right, big fella. Give me one more.
One more last question. So we talked a little bit about competitive golf with me, but tell me, what is your like most memorable moment on the golf course, like at a competitive, like say, because I mean, you've captained the Morgan Cup, you've captained the Granddaddy. Like, tell me like a THP moment of competitive golf that just resonates with you that like, man, like that was clutch for me. I came through. That's something that you can always go back and say, hey, I did this and I can do it again if I need to.
I don't think there's any one shot. I'm thrilled to hold a very, very lonely, rarefied air in that I'm the only winning Granddaddy and Morgan Cup captain. It's not something I parade around, but I'm absolutely, I'll admit, of all the things people give me grief about when they mention that, it does give me all the good feels that I'm looking for, you know. So to watch my guys go out there, obviously Callaway has a big task this year. Shout out to my guys going out there for Team THP. I've met a lot of them, shared a lot of laughs with them, and will be heavily rooting for them. I actually have them in favorited this year. As long as Blazenden uses a mallet, I have complete faith in them. But yeah, that taking my guys out there and doing something that a lot of people at that point believed would probably be impossible was a pretty big thrill. And to do it in the fashion we did and to hit the shots that I did, I actually do have one shot, and it's not okay that I remember it from where I was. It was at the end of the first 18, we were wrapping up our round. And on the front nine, we lost a heartbreaker. We lost on the eighth hole. And so we did not win that point. So I knew we needed the second point, and I was grinding. I was grinding, and I hit a sprinkler head on a par five. It was a perfect layup shot just to the left of the green. Hits the sprinkler head that's like 2 feet off the green. Ricochets like damn near OB behind a friggin' tree. And I'm like hot. For two holes, I'm sideways, okay? And then I step up, hit a great shot on a par three to the point where as long as I make a birdie, we can't lose in the last hole. So I put a shot to about 12 feet. I've got pictures of it on my wall. I'll show you, even though they can't see it. It is right there. It's the progression of me. And the whole group is already done, and they're watching us come in. Luke Williams from Callaway rolls a putt to basically give me distance for his birdie, and we're up one at the time. I have a 12-footer. I knock it dead. We win the point. We get big hugs. That to me was like, everyone's watching. I freaking did it. Let's go win this damn thing.
I love it. That's awesome. I mean, anytime you have a putt to like win and pull through for your team like that, 12-footer, that's solid right there, man.
I'm just happy to say I didn't have to know what it feels like to miss it, so that was more thrilling than making the putt and tying. But hey man, it's been super fun having you on again. Yeah, we'll get you on again with Dax so you guys can go toe-to-toe, little cat fight, whatever you want to call it. Happy Thanksgiving, man. And yeah, we will be talking, but you know, try and be safe, enjoy the holidays. And if anyone's out there playing golf this weekend, and I hope you do, and I hope the weather's better than it is here, you better have a great time, play well, make it count, because if you're in my state, you're not going to have too many more good opportunities. Mike, thanks again, buddy.
Hey, thank you. Happy Thanksgiving, buddy. Thanks for having me.
All right. Talk to you guys next week.
THP Radio on the Hackers Paradise Podcast Network, your number one source for all things golf. Subscribe on iTunes to never miss an episode.